This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
Welcome to the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network on a Thursday night. Bobby Krivitsky and Brendan Connolly. We come to you live from the Pepe compound in Boston, Massachusetts. We have Austin Rodriguez producing the show back in Houston, keeping the trains on the tracks. A lot to get to, a loaded rundown for you tonight. Everything from the NBA All-Star Game to trade intel and what we think might happen between now and February 9th. And of course, Brendan, pretty big event in the football world that is getting ready to happen.
Getting ready to happen would be the Super Bowl, yes, and we also had the retirement of a legend, the GOAT himself, Tom Brady. So we got a loaded show tonight.
We absolutely do. There's a lot going on. We will be joined by Connor Mack, a professional sports handicapper. He will join us to put more money into your pockets and your bank accounts within the hour. And in hour number two, we have Russell Baxter, a football historian and guru, joining us to talk about everything from Brady's retirement to his thoughts on the Super Bowl between the Chiefs and the Eagles. But why don't we start by diving into the AFC Championship game? And, you know, it's interesting, Brendan, because there's a lot of focus on the officiating, and it wasn't just incompetence. It was the lean towards one side that makes it hard to come away from that game and not think that the NFL had an agenda and wanted Mahomes in the Super Bowl.
What, you didn't think that was a dirty hit on the sideline at the end of that game?
Well, no, that was clearly a penalty. A little two-hand shove, too late to get there. That was costly. That was a correct call. And you know what? I do like, not everyone dives into the people who really know the football nuances, but Mike Tice, he was an NFL head coach, most notably with the Vikings, and he was an offensive line expert and former player. His son, Nate Tice, who really knows the inside and outs, especially of offensive line play, made it his point on Twitter to educate people that when you do a rip move, like the Bengals pass rushers all did on that play you're talking about, that you can now, it's not a holding. You can, I guess, grab them by the neck, and it's clean. So there, it's, you know, thumbs down to all the couch officials, thumbs up to the real zebras who were out there. But there was a blatant block in the back by two people on the punt return that set up the Chiefs with the field position that led to the game-winning kick.
Yeah, I feel like you were rooting for Cincy Hart in this game. It's just
I did not have a rooting interest, and I think as we talk about this game, that will become clear. More than anything, I root to be entertained. Unless I have money on the line, that changes everything. But if I don't, then I just want to be entertained.
I think this was a compelling game all the way around, but I do agree with you. It felt like Cincinnati had this game locked up and ready to go, and then a few weird calls happened at the end of regulation. Kansas City gets second life, and then, boom, next thing you know, Pat Mahomes does what he does, and he leads them on another game-winning drive with some assistance from Osai, who I feel bad for because we saw what happened in the post game. His teammates are calling him out as he's walking into the locker room. Team had to apologize afterward, and this guy, he was having a great game. That's what I really feel bad for him for. It felt like he was lighting it up out there, making one play after the next, and at the end of the day, everyone's just going to remember that play at the end of the championship.
Yeah, and, you know, Jermaine Pratt, that's a bad look, but at the same time, just like you understand and want to show grace and forgiveness to Osai for the penalty, I think Pratt, you know, as poor a reaction and as he handled it as that was,
heat of the moment type situation.
Yeah, that you also want to show that same kind of understanding and perspective with him. And I really like that most of his teammates did come to his aid. BJ Hill was standing right next to him, shoulder by shoulder, as he took questions after the game in front of his locker. So I liked the camaraderie from the Bengals. Maybe they used this as fuel. The Seahawks, after they lost and everything, they crumbled. But we've seen a lot of questions about Russell Wilson, the leader and the galvanizing force in Denver yet again. So that's a different story there. And, you know, Brendan, I thought that in the second half, the Bengals were the better team. They outscored Kansas City 14-10. But
they really took control of the game, it felt like, until about 5 minutes left or so, and then the tide started to turn.
Exactly. That's exactly where I'm going here, that both teams had two drives before the game-winning field goal. Mahomes started at his one-yard line, and he drove it to midfield. The Bengals take over at their 20, and guess what happens? They ultimately end up starting on second and three, they take two deep shots. The second one, double coverage, T. Higgins, interception. But Mahomes, he leads Kansas City again, this time from its 14-yard line across midfield, and as a result, Cincinnati is now taking over at their six. Mahomes gave the Chiefs a chance to win in regulation. The refs, they continue to show favoritism, as we've discussed, and Osai, that was a terrible decision in the heat of the moment. But Kansas City is comfortable in those moments, and the Bengals, Joe Burrow included, came up small.
Yes, they did. I mean, I thought they were going to come through with it, especially after that Hail Mary touchdown to Ja'Marr Chase on fourth down. I don't think anyone was expecting that. And then you see that connection, and you're like, wow, that is one of the best tandems in the NFL right there, and that's why, right there, that moment. And I really thought it was over at that stage, and then can never count out the Chiefs. I mean, hey, this is the team that came full length of the field, kicked a field goal in 13 seconds to win last year against Buffalo. You never can count out Pat Mahomes, and that's why, even though a lot of people are picking against the Chiefs in this upcoming Super Bowl, I just have a hard time doing it.
That's the thing. We're going to talk about the matchup later, but I just can't pick against Mahomes. And now what we're seeing is his evolution, that they score in 13 seconds last year against the Bills, and you can say, well, they had Tyreek Hill. And that's a totally fair and obvious point. But now he is at the point in his development where he can take us and put 30-plus on the board.
I was going to say, that's the thing. Like, everyone's like, oh, he's got no Tyreek Hill. How is he going to overcome this loss? Oh, he just lost, was it Slayton or Tony?
He lost Kadarius Tony. They had other
I always cross up Slayton and Tony for some reason.
He threw a guy for a first down that I don't even know if Chiefs fans were familiar with. You know, I'd have to pull it up right now.
No. I remember. I remember who we were talking about. I'm like, who is this guy?
Came out of nowhere.
Who is this guy?
It was like a Madden creative player, and he's throwing to him for 12 yards.
Marcus Valdes-Scantling, who's been a third or fourth receiver on most teams, ended up putting 116 yards up on six receptions. So it doesn't matter who's out there. Pat Mahomes is going to make plays and somehow disperse the ball to his receivers, and they're going to make scoring plays. That's just what this Chiefs team is, and that's why I can never count them out. I just can't do it. I can't fathom them losing. Like, when they lost to Tom Brady a few years ago, that felt like the exception to the rule. I was like, okay, we're not going to see this again. Nothing like this. And we haven't since. We haven't since, and I think Kansas City is going to go in. It's going to be a close one. Everyone's picking Philadelphia in a one-point game, or so 1.5 points was the spread last night when I last checked. I think Kansas City wins, but we'll go into that later on, obviously.
And can I tell you what? I think that Burrow, it is a bad look for him to get outperformed by Patrick Mahomes on one ankle when it's the latter facing a tougher defense.
And not to mention, since he was talking a lot of smack all week long, it didn't matter whether it was the players.
Burrowhead Stadium, they were
players,
talking,
the coaches,
they were
the mayor was talking smack. Everyone
was so
talking.
Corny.
I was like, really? Like, of all the teams in the world, this is not one you want to clown
during
a championship
week. I love when Kelsey
week.
Lit him up after the game. You put yourself in that position when you do something like that, and it's clear the mayor didn't seem like he even knew who Joe Burrow was, let alone, you know, the context. He's reading off the script, looking down every other word.
I tend to think Travis Kelsey can be a hard-o sometimes, but after that game and all the smack talk that was going into it, I don't blame him one bit.
I mean, if you're on the Chiefs, it'd be a mistake not to use it as fuel. It's just a little extra motivation. And then Kelsey, he's an entertainer. He brought it up at the podium. So hats off to him there. But to get back to Joe Burrow getting outdueled by Patrick Mahomes, who's on one leg playing a tougher defense to go against, Burrow throws for 250 yards plus the interception. He's 23 of 38. And you brought up the heave to Ja'Marr Chase in double coverage, and it's a good throw and a hell of a catch by Chase. But that was really their best offense, was chuck it up and hope for the best. And Mahomes, you know, I made this point on these airwaves last week leading into the game, that in some ways he becomes more dangerous on one leg because he's that talented, that now it becomes, are you going to give him the checkdowns? Because he will take them. And Isaiah Pacheco had a terrific game as a receiver.
Not as a running back. He only had 26 yards in that department.
Not on the ground.
He found another way to contribute. He looked like a Patriots player.
Right. And so now what happens is T. do you start to say, okay, well, they're hurting us with this. We have to come up. And now you're exposing yourself further down the field in the intermediate level, for example, and Mahomes will slice you and dice you that way. So that speaks to how good he is, that it's kind of, he put the Bengals, because of his ankle injury, in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation.
Yeah, it's crazy because in a way, like, it does limit him. Obviously, we know he's a great athlete, but I feel like he's just as deadly from the pocket. Like, even in his limited role, he still finds a way to make it work. And that's the magic of Pat Mahomes. Like,
yeah.
He's just that good. He's just that good. I can't believe how well he's been doing in the last couple of weeks. And I'm surprised people are still doubting him. Like, it just feels like the tide has been going against the Chiefs in recent weeks.
Isn't that crazy? It does feel like he, you know, lost some of that steam. And now, of course, everyone comes all the way back to some already declaring him the greatest quarterback ever.
Okay,
now,
that's a little far.
I will give you the most talented quarterback ever. And by the way, no one wants to put in the time and the energy and the effort to do this, but we'd really have to go back and watch a John Elway, a Dan Marino, a Joe Montana, and see just how much weight we put on Patrick Mahomes being able to make plays with his legs compared to what those guys could do with their arm. Because we might weigh it out and say, well, you know what? He's the most dynamic quarterback of all time, but not the most talented quarterback of all time.
Dynamic, I think, is the good word to say, because it feels like every once in a while, usually one play a game, he'll just do something absolutely insane that you're not expecting, like, think of the Super Bowl when they lost. People call it one of the greatest plays of all time, and a reception wasn't even made when he made that diving throw. He's going horizontal to the ground. He still throws like 50 yards down to the field, down the field into the end zone. The receiver drops a touchdown, but like stuff like that. That's why people think he's that good. I think in time, he might climb that list. Right now, he's not in that conversation.
That's the thing. 5 years, an AFC Championship game appearance every year, 3 Super Bowl berths, 1 win, might make it 2. But it takes time to get to Tom Brady's level. Stick with us on the Diehards NFC Championship Talk up next.
You're listening to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Kravitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the SportsMap Radio Network. Bobby Kravitsky alongside Brendan, the arsonist, Connolly. We dove into the AFC Championship game. It is time to flip conferences to the NFC title matchup. I want to start here, Brendan, with actually a look ahead for San Francisco.
Oh, boy.
Are they making a mistake with the Brock Purdy arm injury? And he might require Tommy John surgery. We'll see. Should they have gone after Tom Brady?
You know what? I think so. I think they should have at this stage of the game. Why not? You get him for 1 year. You don't know what's going to happen with Trey Lance. Like, I know he's your guy, but we still don't know what he's going to do in the NFL. We know Purdy's had his sample size, but he's injured. We don't know how he's going to return. Why not go after a guy who, if you plug into your already made system, who could easily take you there? Why not? Like, I just don't see the risk.
I'd be lying if I didn't say that we were having conversations on Trey Lance Island about, but we might have to sell this property. But for now, we hold firm with massive concern about what his NFL future holds. When it comes to Brock Purdy, and so far, what we know is that there's hope. And hope was the word, not a belief, not an expectation, that he doesn't need Tommy John surgery and that he could be ready for training camp or sometime before the season. But, man, if it turns out to be the other way with all the weapons they have, I understand that you don't want to, you know, why Brock Purdy's earned the right. You go forward with him if he's healthy. But if it's about winning a Super Bowl, go get Tom Brady with those weapons. You got to feel pretty good about your prospects.
And think about it, though. They almost made it with Mr. Irrelevant, a guy who got plugged in halfway through the year, and he almost took them all the way. If he doesn't go down in that game against Philly, I think they have a shot at winning it. Now, do they? I don't know. Philly's looked pretty good all season long, but I still would have given them a shot. Now, once Josh Johnson came in, who's been in the league for, what, 13, 14 years now, it feels like? When's this guy going to retire? I don't know how, but I knew they were done at that point. So I just don't understand why not take a shot. Bring in a guy like Tom Brady, who, if you plug in, he can easily just run the offense quickly because he's one of the smartest guys in NFL history.
Yeah, exactly. And let me ask you this. Jimmy Garoppolo.
Oh.
Injured. Very fun. Trey Lance, injured. Brock Purdy, injured. Josh Johnson comes in less than 4 quarters, injured, suffers a concussion. Do you blame Kyle Shanahan at all for having four quarterbacks get injured in one season?
I don't blame him for that. I think that's just horrible luck in a lot of respects. What I do blame him for is not going after a guy like Tom Brady in either of the chances he's had, because I feel like if he had, they'd have a Super Bowl by now. He'd have a Super Bowl by now. But it feels like he wants to win it on his own. It's just the sense I'm getting.
I like the approach of, I think the highest margin for error is if you have a star-studded supporting cast. And as good as you can afford and your ownership will green light you to do so, that is more sustainable, as we've seen. They went through all those quarterbacks, and up until it was Josh Johnson, they were a legitimate Super Bowl contender. If you want, and if you're a Niners fan, you probably do make the case for why they were the favorite before that happened. So I like the approach. I don't really blame Kyle Shanahan for what happened, but when it's four quarterbacks, you can't have 0% culpability in it.
I mean, it is bad luck. That's just my opinion, like just looking at it from the outside. How does that happen to four straight guys in the same season? I don't know. Do you think it's just a lack of protection? Do you think they need to upgrade at the line for the most part? What do you think the main cause is?
So I think that you have to examine each one in and of itself. And when it comes to Trey Lance,
with Jimmy G and Trey Lance, those are guys that I see as injury prone. Brock Purdy was a freak injury, I think, that happened at the worst possible time.
So with Lance, I think it was a matter of they looked at his development and where he was as a passer, and they trusted his running a lot more. And the more you run, the more risk you are to get injured, and that's what happened there. Maybe they did it too much, and it got burned for it quickly. With Garoppolo and with Purdy, I look at it and say, the backside of the line, especially McGlinchey at right tackle, really shaky, and he's going into free agency now. And then also, when you run all these RPOs and play actions, you do end up with the backside, the tight end, blocking an edge defender, and he might lose that matchup. And that's what happened on the one where Purdy got hurt, where Hassan Reddick just absolutely toyed with the backup tight end and gets to Purdy and takes his elbow out.
Yeah, so that I do agree with you on that front. You got to find a way to upgrade the line going forward. And you mentioned it, they're going to lose a couple of key pieces. So do you address that through the draft, or would you go out and sign a big name?
Good tackles do not become available.
No,
they
don't.
Not many of them.
And they're very expensive if they do somehow squeak loose.
And the Niners are real limited in terms of resources. So we'll see what happens. You know, they might not be thrilled about bringing back McGlinchey, and the draft makes sense. It doesn't have to be the first round, but I think that that has to be at the top of the priority list.
Now, do you know what would be a very easy way to solve that problem? It would just be throwing a big bag of money at the guy who throws the ball faster than any other player in NFL history, meaning Tom
Touché.
Brady.
Yeah, I mean, it all points to they should have been more aggressive in going after Tom Brady, and maybe he would have retired no matter what at this stage in the game.
It felt like he was choosing between either a team that he wanted to go to and either retiring or Tampa, and I feel like he just decided it came down to two options, and he chose the easier one.
Looking at the victors from the NFC Championship, the Eagles beat Daniel Jones and mostly Josh Johnson. Brock Purdy was barely able to throw the football.
He was in there for 12 seconds.
Even when he came back, he couldn't throw it. So, I mean, that's who they beat. I also look at it and say there's a lot of people who cling to that and are crying over spilled milk. They had a weak schedule, no doubt. They also dominated that competition. And don't forget, they went to Dallas with Gardner Minshew, and it came down to the last play of the game. The Eagles outscored their competition by 155 points in the regular season.
And they've outscored their opposition in the postseason 69-14, if I'm not mistaken.
They have a 55-point advantage through two playoff games. So did they benefit from a weak schedule? Absolutely.
Absolutely. But
Niners have beaten them with Brock Purdy, of course. But surviving the war of attrition, Brennan, is a part of what it takes to be a championship and a champion, and this team could absolutely go to Glendale and beat the Chiefs.
You know what? I give them a sniff because I was doubting them all season long. I think a lot of people were doubting them, at least at the beginning of the season when Jalen Hurts came back. We didn't know what type of a quarterback we were going to get. Was he going to build upon last year? When he had kind of a breakout season, he did. And now he's in the MVP conversation and has the Eagles on the precipice of a Super Bowl title. This is probably going to be their biggest challenge of the whole year. I would still lean Kansas City in this one. But I'm not going to say Philly's going to get blown out like 27-14. I think this is going to come down to the last possession.
And I think it's going to be a hell of a game. Can't wait to dive into that topic, not just us, but also with Connor Mack from a gambling perspective, and then Russell Baxter, a football historian and guru, in hour number two. When it comes to Jalen Hurts, he comes on the scene, he gets some fill-in work for Carson Wentz, and Eagles fans immediately can smell it, that he's better than Wentz. He's the guy to move forward with. He gets his opportunity last season. It's a promising campaign, but it ends in embarrassing fashion. Mm-hmm. The Bucs are daring him to beat them down the field, and he can't do it. Then what happens? Philadelphia doesn't say, this might be relevant to another conversation we have later on, Philadelphia doesn't say, Jalen Hurts isn't the guy, we need to go look for a new solution. They say, what happens if we give this guy the proper weapons? If we give him some legitimate downfield options, and in comes A.J. Brown, a number one centerpiece, and if Jalen Hurts didn't get hurt, then there's no discussion about who was going to win the MVP. He was in the driver's seat for it. Now it's unclear who will take home that hardware. But more importantly to him, I'm sure, he has his team in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and you know what? I think I know which team you're referencing as a comp. We'll talk about them later. But right now, you're right. A.J. Brown has really opened up that whole offense. I asked John Lyons this the other night on Sports Map here. Do you think that was the difference, just adding A.J. Brown alone? Do you think that was the driving force that really sparked this whole Eagles offense? I'd say I'd make a case that it did, because it opened up guys like Devontae Smith and the running game to really take over, because just having that downfield threat just takes away so many weapons on the defensive side of the ball.
Now, this is what you can't lose sight of. Philadelphia's offense was at a place where you were adding A.J. Brown, a number one centerpiece, to put you over the top when you had the best offensive line in football, mm-hmm. an outstanding running game, a really good tight end in Dallas Goedert, and Devontae Smith. So you had a lot in place already. It was a sound infrastructure.
Now you just needed that one thing that really took you over the top, and I think A.J. Brown was the piece that they were looking for.
Right. So it's not a carbon copy for other teams to say, well, let's just go get the number one piece and our work is done. It's not. The Eagles had a lot of the groundwork already accomplished.
Mm-hmm. No pun intended.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, I look at them, though, and I think that teams are seeing the exorbitant prices to keep a quarterback. They're well aware of what is coming Patrick Mahomes' way, and they look at it and say, you know, we don't want to pay Lamar Jackson $275 million fully guaranteed.
Let's try
because
and find
of
that
what
guy.
Happened with Deshaun Watson. Yeah, let's find a Jalen Hurts-type quarterback. Let's load up with weapons. Plus, it has a little bit of that San Francisco DNA that we can absorb a hit and be better equipped to recover from it because of who else we have around the quarterback. So let's go that direction as opposed to just pay, you know, half a billion, for example, to an elite quarterback.
Yeah, I think Jalen Hurts, they've got him under control for another, what, 3 years after this season?
Yep.
Yeah, so they're in good position, and I think he has the potential to be a Lamar Jackson. Just needs to get a little bit better in the passing game, and he's already taken that next step this year.
And Hurts isn't going to break the bank either when it comes time for his new deal. Stick with us here on the Diehards. Coming up next, we have Connor Mack, professional sports handicapper, joining us here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network. This program is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. Call or click today. Find out if we could save you hundreds on your car insurance. Bobby Krivitsky and Brendan Connolly. And we are joined right now by sports handicapper Connor Mack from Pub Sports Radio, one of the best in the business, a sharp amongst sharps. Connor, thanks as always for taking the time.
Oh, as always, I'm always glad to be on here, talk sports with you, gambling, and a little thing called the Super Bowl coming up. I'm pumped.
Yes, sir, Connor. Can't wait to get your perspective on it. What I'm curious about initially is, does the fact that it is the Super Bowl, does that have any effect on your volume of bets or your willingness to roll the figurative dice?
It's just one more game to me. You know, the enamorment with the props, the crazy huge book of all those props, everything goes around with it in the circus. But to me, it's just one more game. If I don't like the side in the Super Bowl, I'm not going to play it. It's just another game to me. And there's always, in some of these props, kind of have something on that you can find an advantage and play, especially at some of these prices, because now you can get anything and everything. So what's going on, the Gatorade, you know, all that stuff that they have to use that now.
Yeah, the length of the national anthem, everything's on the table here when it comes to the Super Bowl. On the field, I'm curious, what are your initial thoughts on this matchup between the Chiefs and the Eagles?
Wow, it's interesting. This Eagles team, I think, is one of the most complete teams roster, you know, in all of football, and it's been that way all year long. Do I think they've had the easiest schedule? I guess, you know, it was second when it came down to the rankings this year. But, they got to play who's in front of them. I thought they got basically the easiest way to get to the Super Bowl. It was a little, you know, the Purdy injury, you know. But they got it done, you know, in that game. On the flip side, the Chiefs played great at home. I still think the Bengals should have won that game. Maybe not should have won that game, but I think it would have been – I think they could have won it. Let's just say that. But the Chiefs' defense played well. I wanted to get – I was thinking this today – Bobby, because with the Chiefs, you know, now I see Patrick Mahomes. The only time I saw him dominating was the Bucs. In a real football game in that Super Bowl, he just was absolutely looked just nowhere. They just had him figured out. But other than that, even in his losses in the NFL, he's been right there. So as much as I love the Eagles, and there's a couple of props I'll get to that I really like on the side with them, it's you know, Patrick Mahomes with a few weeks to rest up, I really, really like. But the thing I was talking about was having Hill gone this year. You mentioned this all year to me. I wanted to bring it up to you now to stretch the field. Now we have injured wide receivers for this Chiefs team. It looks like Tony and Schuster probably will go, you know, by these 2 weeks. Hardman, from all I hear, is not going to go. He played, obviously, the other day in the AFC Championship game. From all I'm hearing already, he probably won't go. But who knows? We still are whatever, 10 days out. But, yeah, so it'll be tough receiver-wise. How much can you get to Kelce, the Dublin? Both defenses, I think, are very good. Both defensive lines, I think, are solid. So maybe look for sack props there. But I think this football game is tight. It is tough. I have not made a bet yet, as I think the Eagles are the little bit better team, but I keep going back to Patrick Mahomes, you know, plus points or just taking in money line, to win the game. And, you know, Andy Reid, maybe to win another Super Bowl a couple weeks, you know, against his old team.
Well, Connor, I think a lot of the public agrees with you on this instance with how close this game is going to be. And it feels like it's all because of the injuries to the Chiefs right now. Just looking at the money line and the betting spreads here, right now Philadelphia is a 1.5-point favorite, according to 62% of bettors. Do you agree with that, or do you hesitate there? Would you back off just because of your thoughts on Mahomes?
I would say that the Eagles are just about that. I mean, this is the Super Bowl. They're not three. They're not 3.5. This is on a neutral field. So really, I don't think it's not that big. They're basically saying this is basically a pick'em that they're slightly giving it to a banged-up Chiefs team that are dealing with injuries. So I think it's very close. And a lot of this public, I think, love the Eagles, and I think they get it done. But I'm not so sure of that. I think the Chiefs will be in this football game.
Only thing that would give me pause is that the Chiefs are 7-11-1 against the spread on the course of this season. So I'm a little worried there on that front, but you're right. You can never count out Pat Mahomes, and I've been saying that all show tonight.
Yeah, real quick, though, that's always the Chiefs are always favorites, though. I have to double-check. I'm going to go through all my stuff here the next few days. How, you know, Mahomes as a dog. Even that when they lost that Super Bowl, they were favorites, the Bucks, because I had the Bucks. I believe getting three, I had a money line as well. There hasn't been too many times where they kind of, you know, another team they're loving on. Obviously, that Bengals game was close this last week, but a lot of injuries that we were talking about to Mahomes. But maybe them in a little bit of a dog roll, even though it's small, might just be good for this Chiefs team that's always laying massive points and it hard for them to cover.
You know, it's like the NFL players, no one cares about your fantasy team. The Chiefs didn't care about the spread. There were times where I thought there's no way they don't cover, and they didn't. And then like you and Brendan both pointed out there, just the volume there, 7-11-1 speaks to them being the favorites every single week and how impressive that is. Connor, I'm curious here. you know, we'll see where everything settles in at. But are there any prop bets that you're already preparing to go after, e.g. Travis Kelce and his catches? You know, it's been a consistent winner for us throughout the postseason.
I think we stick with it. I just think he has to be big. Obviously, he was dealing with the back, and but it was enough. And now he gets 2 weeks. He'll do as much as he can. You could tell. But I think he looked okay. Obviously, he looked tentative in that game, but he got it done. He has to be. And dealing with these other injuries, it seems to be enough. I mean, look at Scantling, a guy that can be nowhere on the field, just have a massive game. Even I was going, wow. So one thing about the Chiefs, they don't have that number one receiver. They got depth, even with all these injuries. But I think he's a go-to. I think he's a must. When you look at the props, I think you can get over with him. From the flip side, with the Eagles, everything changed because how you beat the 49ers was through the air, and Brock Purdy went out. Everything just flipped. And once Johnson went out, it was just they had to run the ball. It wasn't a great thing to watch. So when they do that, I just think that hurts to me. Is the thing. And you know what? When I watched that game, they didn't have to do it until the end. He started running. I thought he only had like 2 rushing attempts. He ended up with 11. This is one of my favorite bets, over 10.5 rushing attempts. This is the Super Bowl. He averaged just over 11 all year long. Not only do I like his 10.5 over, his yards are 48.5. Obviously, his touchdown is right around even money. But I think he'll run it in this one. So when he finished that game, at the end, a lot of those drives kind of towards the end, he ran and he ended up with 39 rushing yards, but he got over that mark. I think there were some games where he ran it 18 times. I think he's got to be the guy this week. And I was shocked just how well the Eagles ran it on this 49ers defense when I thought the Eagles needed to throw it. The whole game, like I said, the whole game plan got out of mark there with everything that went down with the Purdy injury. But to me, one of my favorite props, I looked at this 10.5 attempts for Hurts. I think he gets over that. I think he's going to run. He's going to get over 48.5 and the attempt.
Well, Connor, how do you see this game shaping out in terms of scoring? Right now, the over-under set at 50.5. Last week, I think a lot of people thought Cincy and Kansas City would go way over that 48-point mark, and they failed to do so. Is this one where we hedge our bets here and think it's going to go under?
Right now, I don't have a great feel on this total. You know what was big about that game last week, though? It did get to under early, which I kind of thought, feeling out process, we got a bunch of field goals, and I thought more of these field goals were turned into touchdowns, which they did a few in the second half. And we got 20-20 with about what, gentlemen? It was 12 minutes left in that mm-hmm. football game. I thought it might get over. It was very close, and then it just shut down again. Obviously, your tie football game, AFC Championship to get to the Super Bowl, everything kind of slows down. I think this might be a little bit high, too. Super Bowls can get kind of wonky, though. You know, they just sometimes it just gets into a shootout, and other ways it stays under. I like how both these defenses have played so far this year. I think they've been really, really good. One other key I wanted to mention I forgot on the props was the Chiefs have gotten beat along that with a slot receiver. We saw Boyd get hurt right away after he had a couple big catches. They continuously got beat. Kirk was one. They only have those two. You know, Pascal, all these guys that they have, Gainwell gets some. They really don't have a third receiver. I think Goddard, you know, he's in the mid 40s, 45 yards right around there or lower. I think he's got to be used over the middle of the field. So not only the tight end for the Chiefs we mentioned, but for him, prop-wise. I forgot to bring that up. Sorry.
It's a great point. He is Connor Mack, a sports handicapper for Pub Sports Radio, bringing you tremendous insight to help you profit off the Super Bowl. Stick with us here on the NBA Trade Deadline Talk up next.
You're listening to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
Brendan, the Boston Celtics at 37-15 have the best record in the NBA. The trade deadline is February 9th, a week away. What would you like to see them do between now and then?
You see, I thought the Celtics were in very good position a few weeks ago before they dealt Noah Vonleh. Now, people are probably asking me, why the heck should I care about Noah Vonleh, who basically couldn't see the floor? I just like the depth. I like the depth at that position. The Celtics needed big men help, and Robert Williams came back. I think that was their cue to say, hey, we got our big guy back. Let's deal a piece and see if we can clear some cap room, add some picks or whatever. They ended up just dealing him away for basically pennies on the dollar. And then Williams gets hurt. So now you got to go out there and you got to look for some ancillary help, be it at the guard position to help back up Marcus Smart, or, as I just mentioned, at center or power forward. I think they have to go out and you don't have to make a big swing for the fences. You don't have to go out like in past years and try to deal for a guy like Bradley Beal, which I know green teamers have been hoping for over the past few years. And now that they've finally reached this pinnacle, I don't think they have to go for that anymore. They just got to find the right ancillary piece. Don't overdo it, but I think Brad Stevens will make a move for a big man. That would be my guess.
So trading Noah Vonleh was important because it saved the Celtics roughly $7 million on the luxury tax bill, which is quite expensive. And that money will be reinvested. Mm-hmm. So why spend it on Noah Vonleh when you can upgrade? And that might come later on the buyout market. It could be feeling more comfortable about spending on a trade and what that financial return could look like. For the Celtics, there are two names that I've long been enamored with.
Okay.
One is a reunion with Kelly Olynyk. And I think
that's been picking up steam lately.
I think it makes the most sense because of the Celtics' championship aspirations and where they sit right now. So it is a more beneficial move for the next 2 years, but he's only 31 in a day and age when athletes age more gracefully than ever.
I've heard another former Celtic name getting tossed around as well, but I'll let you finish your list first.
Sure. So with Olynyk, I think it's the idea of a reliable third center, which is a need for this team, in my estimation, and to add more shooting to the roster. So, for example, when it's Jason Tatum and four guys from the second unit, to have it be Malcolm Brogdon, Derek White, Grant Williams, and now Kelly Olynyk, that makes life a lot more comfortable for your team come playoff time, and you can trust Olynyk
feels like a
to
starting
stay
lineup
on the floor, right?
on a lesser team, but yes, it feels like a starting lineup almost.
And he helps with pacing Robert Williams and Al Horford. You can trust him for longer shifts as opposed to spot minutes from a Luke Kornet. So Kelly Olynyk is one of the names, I would say, at the top of my list.
You know what? As a secondary piece, like the eighth or ninth man off the bench, I could see that. I just don't want him coming in and being your starter again.
No, I don't want
to go back to the days of the...
Even with an injury to Horford or Robert Williams, he would not start.
Yeah, I was going to say, as long as he's not out there as your number one center, and he's just a backup guy
number
who can
three.
Add...
Number get, three on the depth
number
chart.
Number three on the depth chart, and he can hit a couple of threes, get you some scoring off the bench. Yeah, I like that role for Kelly Olynyk. I just don't want him being a focal point. That's the only thing I don't want to see the Celtics doing is going back to their old ways and having him take over. But who was the other name on your list that you wanted to point out?
Second, and this guy makes more sense for the long haul. They do have to re-sign him, but if they trade for him, then you can take that as a sign that they intend to do so. Naz Reid from Minnesota.
Oh.
He's already stepped into a starting role with the Karl Anthony Towns injury. And he
price won't be too expensive at this stage. It hasn't gone up yet.
He's just coming off his rookie deal. He's a 24-year-old center, and he just keeps getting better and better. He hit a huge three last night against the Warriors. He's a good defender. He's mobile. He plays with a lot of energy and competes hard. He's a guy who checks every box. He's not as good of a shooter as Kelly Olynyk, so that's why I point towards the veteran and reunion there. But Naz Reid, and if you get him long-term, that is a starting center who can play alongside Robert Williams.
I like it. I like it. And because he's cheap at this moment. Now, I think because he's played a little bit, he's actually gained some seasoning and he's looked pretty good out there. It's probably going to take a couple of picks and maybe a name or two to get a guy like that. But I like it. I would like that deal. The name that I was referring to earlier, former Celtic that everyone's been talking about, is the disgruntled Jay Crowder, who's been sitting on the bench for Phoenix, I should say, all season long. Hasn't played because he's waiting to be traded. Now, am I the biggest fan at this stage of his career? Probably not. Would you consider that, just because he's already been here before?
I'd consider it. The price is not particularly steep, and it's a seller's market. But the Bucks have been the most aggressive. They've made their intentions clear since the summer. So ultimately, I think a deal gets done, and what's happening now is that the Suns are holding out to see, can anyone top what's not a terrible but not a particularly impressive offer that's headlined by Jordan Nwora?
Yeah, and you know what? I think a guy like Crowder, depends on how he's obviously been keeping up as time has worn on over the course of the season, that's the type of guy, as the eighth guy, you know, coming off the bench there, like, I feel like they're in good shape. Like, whoever picks him up, if it's a contender, I like the move. If he goes to a lesser team, what's the point?
Yeah, and the lesser team wouldn't. Also, keep in mind, the reason that Kratter's away from Phoenix is he's on an expiring contract, and they asked him, rightfully so, to come off the bench, that it was time for Cam Johnson to start the correct evaluation. He didn't take too kindly to that. He took his ball and went home. Entering the season, he was looking for a deal around what he signed to right now, a three-year contract in the neighborhood of $30 million. I mean, he would have to really show out to make that happen. It seems unlikely, even though $10 million in this NBA economy is not too expensive. It still would require an impressive
some
performance
movement
from Crowder, who's an inconsistent shooter.
Yeah, you just never know what you're going to get out of him. Some nights he goes out and he goes like 10 of 12 for like 25 points, and then the next night he's putting up two and maybe three rebounds. You just never know what you're going to get with that guy. Looking around the rest of the NBA, you mentioned this during the break. It's time to start circling the carcasses, the teams that might be selling here at this stage. And one team I think that has got to make a move in the Western Conference is the LA Clippers. This is a team that is in fourth right now behind Denver, Memphis, and Sacramento. I think you could easily leapfrog the latter two teams on that list right there and get yourself in contention for a Western Conference championship. Put yourself in the competition to potentially go to the finals. I still think they're a piece away. Now, some other teams out there, maybe like the Toronto Raptors, for instance, who have been struggling mightily, a team many thought would contend given their pieces, it really hasn't worked out. Chicago Bulls, they haven't been putting it together. It feels like the players all hate each other all of a sudden out of nowhere. If I'm the Clippers, I might be picking up the phone and trying to call a few of those teams over there, see if I can get a guy like a Fred VanVleet, maybe. It's just somebody that will give me a spark to go with the rest of my pieces.
Yeah, and I think you nailed the name there. With the Clippers, they have to reconfigure this roster. They have to get more out of the point guard position. They have to find a more reliable backup center. They're getting crazy trying Zubac at the four, which he's not, and it consistently burns them because he's not a four. So they have to figure out, there's a lot, you know, it's a deep roster on paper, but a lot of these guys are older and inconsistent, like John Wall, for example. So they've got to figure out from the group who they can trade, and it's going to sting, whether it's a Norman Powell or a Terrence Mann, whatever it is, as constructed, it's not working. They're getting ready to move into a new building. I don't know how much longer this window is open with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George because of the durability concerns there. So they need to make something happen. The most urgency in the West does surround that franchise. And, you know, it's going to sting, but I think ultimately it's worth it to give this team a better chance with a closing window.
I do agree. And the NBA, NBA.com also agrees. They actually list the Charlotte Hornets, another team facing a lot of season, as a potential team to poach players from. And they say the Clippers should go after a guy like potentially old Celtic Gordon Hayward. Now, would Gordon Hayward at this stage of his career complement those two pieces in L.A. grade?
Yes, but I think everyone would love to have Gordon Hayward if he could stay healthy.
That's the key.
And so I don't think anyone is trading for him. Might he get bought out? Absolutely. That's up to him and how much money he's willing to give back, because MJ will take that discount. But when it comes to Hayward, you know, if he's on the buyout market, then he's going to have a lot of interested suitors. But in a trade, he'll have none.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's because you just don't want to part ways with a lot of capital to bring in a guy who is usually out for about 30 games a year. So I wouldn't take that risk on a deal. But if he gets bought out, I could see up to like maybe 7 or 8 teams going after him.
Brandon, who's the team in the East who you think has the most urgency and needs to make a move?
So usually you want to look at one of the top 4 teams. I'm going to go with Cleveland here. I think Cleveland should make a move here because...
But has the most urgency?
I don't know if they have the most urgency. I think they should have the most urgency because they're a young team. Feels like they're on the up and up. And I feel like if you add a veteran or something to that core that can really just give them the leadership that they need, they can overtake a team like Brooklyn, or they can leap over a team like Philadelphia and put themselves in a better position to go on a deep playoff run. But if I'm being honest right now, I'd probably say urgency-wise, maybe Philly. Philly is chasing Boston, chasing Milwaukee. They're desperate to try and get in that conversation. Feels like nobody wants to put him in there because everyone seems to think the same thing will happen as it does every year. Once they get into the playoffs, James Harden will turn into a pumpkin, and then Embiid will just have to do too much and won't be able to carry it all himself. So that seems to be the case. If they add a veteran or some big piece, that might give them a chance.
Like a heat-seeking missile, you've identified it. It's the Sixers, and I like their supporting cast, and 33-17. They were in second for a little bit. They're playing as well as anyone right now. Doc Rivers just got Coach of the Month in the East. At the same time, when you look at Harden's age and his playoff shortcomings, these little game James, when you look at Joel Embiid with the durability concerns, and, you know, can you count on him and for how much longer, and the fact that they're not on the same level as Boston and Milwaukee, they need to make a move. Stick with us here on the Diehards. Back to Super Bowl talk up next on Sports Map Radio Network.